Welcome to Voicing Startups, where I, Colin Bournes, interview founders and operators changing the world through audio, voice, and conversational technology. This week on Voicing Startups, I am talking with Anmol, founder of Emitter. Emitter is a voice-first SaaS platform that helps professional service businesses enable voice for their business. Ultimately, Emitter is giving businesses a platform to create valuable and actionable voice experiences for their customers, whether it be in the form of content creation like podcasts or voice-controlled scheduling. In this conversation, we talk about how compelling it can be for businesses to be prepared for the continued evolution of voice in the marketplace. I hope you enjoy this week's episode of Voicing Startups. Hello, Anmol. Thank you for coming on the Voicing Startups podcast.
Thanks a lot, Colin, for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here.
Can we start with just a quick background of yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Anmol, and I've had 5 years experience in the SaaS space before actually venturing out to building Emitter. In my experience across the SaaS space in the 5 years, I led marketing at 2 multi-million dollar SaaS products. One was Traction, which was a SaaS product for private market research. So we used to help venture capital funds invest into startups. And the other one was VWO, which is a bootstrap $20 million ARR SaaS product for A-B testing and conversion optimization. And I led different aspects of marketing at each of these products before actually starting to build out Emitter.
Cool. So what exactly is Emitter and the key value proposition?
Sure. So I think Emitter is really a voice-first SaaS platform. And when I say voice-first SaaS platform, what I mean is that we help merchants, professional services companies enable voice for their business. So for example, in the professional services space, research says that they lose 10% of their business because they miss out on the phone calls that they get. And if you have to look at consumer behavior, most people, let's say, for example, they get home at 7 or 8 in the evening. They reach home and they want to place an order for a laundromat or a home cleaning or a pest control. Since you're reaching home at 8, you're tired. You don't want to really pick up your laptop and do that. You want to either call. And call again happens over voice as a channel. So we're just trying to replicate that over Alexa and Google Home through a single click deploy.
Cool. So what is the origin story of Emitter? Why exactly did you start the company?
It's funny, we actually didn't want to start off with voice. And when we moved to voice as well, we started off with a capability that we later realized we may not be able to monetize. I met my co-founder back in the year 2018, I think exactly a year back, it was in October. I was looking at marketing for a SaaS company, and he was building conversational UI platforms on top of Slack and Facebook. And I was really interested in that space. What I wanted to build was, I wanted to build a marketing automation platform on top of Slack. And he already had experience building conversational UI platforms on top of Slack. So we really started out with that conversation. Later we realized that, you know, we are really, really looking at a niche market, because one, you're going after Slack, and which might not be used by everybody. And within Slack, you're going after marketers, which again might be a very, very small market. And so that's when we realized that, okay, if you want to stick to conversational UI space, maybe Slack is not the best space to go after. So that's when we started to, you know, do a little more research about what's happening in the conversational UI space. And we realized that Alexa has really reached 100 million users. So that's when we thought that, okay, let us do a little more research and figure out what should we do there. Because my co-founder had experience building Alexa skills. So from a consumer perspective and from a business perspective, both we realized that for businesses to have presence on voice as a channel, there is no one platform that's helping them do this. Everybody needs either engineering help or needs to outsource this, which is a lot of effort, right? And which again is a big commitment, because you might take 6 to 8 months to build something out on a new channel that does not have a proven track record, and you later might realize that it may not work. Rather, you use a platform that helps you do this within weeks. And of course, it's probably 1/10 the cost of engineering. So that's when we realized that, one, there is a need on the business side to have a platform. And two, on the consumer side as well, we started to look at the Alexa skills and the voice apps that were present on the Alexa market, Alexa skill store. And we realized that although this channel has become really big, there are 100 million devices, 62% of the people are using it almost every day. Nobody's really monetizing this channel. People are only using it for entertainment, for content consumption, for engagement. So that's where we felt that there is definitely a gap, and it's worth, you know, trying to monetize this channel. And that's when we started to talk to customers in the professional services space, talk to people in the e-commerce space, and learn from them what are the challenges they face in their life and how we can fit those in to the voice space. And we realized that most people in the professional services space face a challenge of being able to, you know, they miss customer calls because either their phone is busy or it's after working hours. And that's why we thought that maybe we could bring in voice to solve this.
Cool. Thanks for that background. What does the business model with Emitter look like? And then you mentioned that you're targeting Fortune 500 companies. Is that your only sort of target customer, or what does your target customer base look like?
Sure. So from a you know, from a business model perspective, it works like any other SaaS platform. We have a subscription fee, so people pay a subscription fee to use our platform on a monthly basis. So for example, in the professional services space, if they want to have a voice ordering capability, they pay us $49 a month. Because right now our product is not, I would not say that it has all the capabilities that people would look for. In cases people ask us for a custom capability, then we ask them for a setup fee, which is a very, very small fee. Again, so that they get the value from this instead of charging them, you know, $1,000 or $2,000. That's not what we're looking to do. So it's a SaaS business model. Today we charge people on a monthly basis. In the future, we hope when voice becomes big, it becomes a habit. We charge people on the number of leads we get them and get a percentage of the revenue. As far as the customer base is concerned, Fortune 500, definitely, yes, we want to go after them because these are people where I think they will see early success for voice because their user base is bigger. So even if, let's say, 1%, 5% or 10% of their user base moves on to voice as a platform, at least they will start to see results. And we as a platform will get feedback about what we should be building. But I think our go-to market really is SMBs and professional services companies, because these are really the people who don't have the engineering bandwidth or the technical know-how of what they should be doing in the voice space. And it wouldn't really make a lot of sense for them from an ROI perspective to hire an engineer just to do this, or to hire an agency just to do this, spend a year building out what they want, then spend another year marketing marketing this platform because consumers are not really buying through this, and then realize that it's not working. So you've lost a lot of time and money. So that's where we feel that, you know, we'll be a great fit. And even from our current customers' perspective, I think we've seen success there.
Cool. So how long has the business been around, and then how many customers do you actually have so far?
Sure. So we started building this in December last year, and we launched our first version of the platform in early March, which was really a podcast capability. So we could help any podcast host, publish their podcast on Alexa. And that's what we realized, that we may not be able to monetize this, and this may not be a great offering. Then we went back to the whiteboard, started talking to people and understanding what problems we should be solving. And that's when we started working on the professional services capability and an ordering capability. So we started working on that we launched late August this year. So the platform really has existed just for 2 months, but we've been in the space for about almost a year. As far as customers are concerned, we are about 10 customers now. Most of them are in the professional services space. A couple of them in the e-commerce space, where again, we are we are experimenting to see if there is a product market fit or not.
Can we dig into some of the specific product features for Emitter?
Absolutely. So from a product perspective, I think some of the specific features are, let's take, for example, an e-commerce platform. So I'll take both e-commerce and professional services. Let's take a professional services company, let's say a laundromat. So when a customer is placing an order, the features that we offer is that one, when you deploy a voice app, one, the customer can place an order and they can select what time, what day do they want the order to be picked up. So that's the voice ordering capability. They can reschedule their order. They can cancel their order. And at the same time, they can track their order. So once you've placed an order, the laundromat has picked it up, you really want to know when will you get it back, which is a natural consumer behavior even with e-commerce. So you can track the status of your order. So that's how the flow works. And these are all capabilities. We integrate with the POS. That's another capability. And the most important capability is that since you're on the voice platform, you don't want the payments to happen on another platform. Otherwise, that whole experience is again going back either to web or to mobile. So payments also happen over voice. People just need to, you know, authorize their Amazon Pay, which is through a yes or a no. And they can also have a simple passcode and the payments happen through voice. Similar is the use case in the e-commerce space as well, that you can place an order, you can repeat your last order from your favorite food store or from your favorite e-commerce store, and you can track that order. So what really happens is that when you place an order, the next obvious thing that people want to do is they want to track it. Where's my order? So that's another capability that we started working on just 2 weeks back. We are about to launch it this week, where people can track the status of their order after placing an order with an e-commerce store. So these are the current capabilities. If I had to talk a bit about what we're building on top of this, I would take a step back and compare voice as a channel to web. If you look at people's behavior on web, what they usually do is, let's say they Google something, they find a piece of content or blog, read it, and ultimately go to that website to understand more about it. The behavior is going to be very, very similar on voice, and we can't really expect people to start buying from day one. So what we're doing is we're adding a layer of gaming and engagement on top so that either professional services companies or e-commerce companies can use this layer to engage existing users on voice or to get their existing customers on voice. And once that habit is built of using voice as a channel, then they can push them to purchase.
Can we dig deeper on that? Because my next question was going to be, what actual control the businesses have over the entire voice experience from the perspective of the customer?
Sure. From an experience perspective, yes, we are a template platform, so they use our template, but we also give them a layer of design. The layer of design is precisely around, what's the welcome message? How do you welcome people on voice, on Alexa or Google Home? What's the help text? If somebody is stuck during their voice experience or voice shopping, if they want some help, what should the help text say? What should be the thank you message? So these are the things that we've added on top. Apart from that, there are a lot of other things that we are working on continuously, from an experience perspective. Like I said, the engagement layer. So what people can do is, they can really decide what sort of game they want to publish. Is it a pricing game that guesses the price of a product for an e-commerce store? Is it loyalty points? So they can really, publish loyalty points and get people to start using voice as a channel to gain more loyalty points. Or get discounts. So for example, they can push notifications or tell people that if you buy through voice, then you'll get a 20% discount for your first purchase. So these are things that we are working on from an experience perspective, where the merchants have control. So they can really edit all of these things.
Okay. And then what sort of distribution do you have with Emitter? Is it only on Alexa, or is it on Google Assistant as well? Or what sort of plans do you have for distribution going forward as we see more and more devices start to have this voice capability come to them?
Sure. We started off with Alexa, and I think we've stuck to that. We're focusing right now only on Alexa. We have the professional services. So on Alexa, we have both e-commerce and professional services. But over the next 3 months or 1 year, we are going to go deeper in the professional services space, build capabilities on Alexa so that people can really run their business on voice as a channel, just the way they would run it on web. They have content on voice, they have purchase on voice, they have engagement on voice, they have customer support and service on voice. So it's the entire set of business aspects that move on voice, but on Alexa. We built the same capability on Google as well, but for now we're sticking only to Alexa, so that once we found that product market fit and we found that our customers are really finding value out of this, getting their ROI, then we will build the Google Home capability as well. Because I think we've realized that it may not make a lot of sense for us to build the Google Home capability. One, the penetration of Google Home is much lesser than Alexa. Two, if I had to think from a consumer, from a customer perspective, if they don't find value on Alexa, and if they don't think that that our product is really adding value, it's getting them revenue, then convincing them to use the Google platform as well is going to be difficult for us.
To go a little bit further on that, with Alexa, are you able to access these experiences across all the different devices, or is it constrained only to the smart speakers, or how does that sort of work?
Sure. So it is across all devices, and we are actively working on a multimodal experience so that on the Echo or the Echo Show, people can really see it on the screen. We show them a card. I think the use case will really be beneficial for e-commerce stores. For example, if somebody, although we are not really sure how this will pan out to be, if people will really purchase apparel or really purchase shoes on Alexa, but if they really want to see it on a screen, then yes. We are actively working on deploying so that whenever a business uses our template or our platform, they have one-click capability to push it across different platforms.
Thanks for that. And then, companies like Juniper are forecasting that voice commerce is going to be an $80 billion market by as soon as 2023. I'm starting to wonder if creating an Alexa skill or Google action is really enough for businesses to take advantage of this market. How do you think a business best prepares for the future of voice commerce?
Sure. I think that's a great question, because I think most people have been really thinking about how this market is going to reach $80 billion worth of transactions. Like you correctly pointed out, just building an Alexa skill or Google action may not be helpful. So you really need to think of, you really need to step out of that engineering mindset. Think like a marketing person. How do you get people to start using this channel? It's not really a platform today, like web is, mobile is. It's just a channel today, and I think there are a lot of years to go for it to become a platform. So for it to get there, I think you need to step out of that engineering mindset, stop just thinking about revenue, and think of creative ways to engage people for it to ultimately get to that $80 billion mark. I don't know if it'll really be an $80 billion market by then. I hope it will be for my own good, but I assume that for it to get there, if you look at people's habits, even today, we use Alexa and Google Home only for entertainment, for things that are habitual. For example, checking the weather, checking the traffic before moving out of the home. And so we really need to think of use cases which are habitual in nature so that people get habituated to using it. And also think of creative ways. For example, we were speaking to a dentist. They wanted to have an Alexa skill. And their obvious question was that, can people place an order? So we told them that yes, they can, but that will not happen as a first step. One, because there are trust issues, there are privacy issues, and it's a very different mindset to move, to make that platform shift. So that's when we spoke to, we brainstormed and we figured out that if you really want to have presence on Alexa, then as step one, what we do is we build a layer of content. So you set up reminders for everybody for dental checkups. So when they get that reminder, that's a push to book a meeting with you. And maybe then they'll book it through Alexa. So these are the things that people really need to think of, comparing it to the behavior on web and mobile. You see ads, you click on them only when you're searching for something. So there's an intent. Similarly, identify things that have an intent or a habit on voice, and then ultimately push them to convert as a paying customer.
Yeah, that makes sense. It'll be interesting to see if some of those forecasts actually come to fruition. I think they're based on metrics to go along with the rise of smart speaker ownership. And then I think it's around $10 a smart speaker by 2023 is where they're deriving that number. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see ultimately if consumer behavior shifts and starts to become comfortable with purchasing through voice. But to get back more to the emitter product, how do you differentiate from any competitors that you have, and what really makes you unique and defensible to those competitors?
Sure. So again, in the competitive space, I would look at two different models that exist as of today. While there are different markets that people are going after, different use cases, but there are two obvious models. One is a design platform, someone like a Voiceflow, where they're focused on developers and designers. And one is a platform like us, where we are focusing on going after businesses who don't have the bandwidth to build or the know-how to build. And of course, there are ancillary markets where people are building a voice, building a voice experience, but not in the Alexa and Google Home space, but let's say just inside a mobile app. So they provide you SDKs that you can use to, have a voice search on your mobile app and things like these. So I think while everybody is trying to target at the same wallet share, how we differentiate ourselves is that we are an end-to-end platform that is easy to deploy. With design platforms, you really need to understand, each and every Alexa API. You need to understand their publishing requirements. So you're more or less building that app, which, like I said, if you really want to build an app which has Amazon Pay in it, Google Pay in it, payment capabilities in it, it might actually run into 8 to 10 months worth of effort for somebody who's done it. For somebody who's not done it, they're actually becoming an Alexa developer in a way through the platform. How we differentiate ourselves is that we are not going to, we don't expect you to learn this as a, we don't expect you to learn the technology. We don't expect you to learn the know-how and really become an Alexa developer. But we want you to use this as a platform which has all the capabilities end-to-end, starting from engagement to purchase to processing orders and then ultimately tracking those orders, right? So it's from being a prospect to becoming a customer to making a payment and to ultimately tracking that order. And then, having support use cases so that if you want to reach out to the customer support, you can just tell Alexa, can you raise a ticket with, let's say, Amazon, for example. So that's how we are looking at the customer journey and building a platform so that people can decide what they want to offer to their customers on voice as a channel. And that's how we differentiate ourselves, that to do this, you don't need an engineering team of 10 people or 1 or 2 years worth of effort. If you want to have a voice platform, you just need a month's effort using our platform to deploy and to do different tests.
Yeah, that distinction makes it pretty clear. Where do you see the emitter product going and the company going over the next 6 months and then the next few years ahead?
Sure. So I think in the next 6 months, based on the feedback that we've got from our existing customers, which again is not a big pool, but most customers have got back to us with certain feature requests, integrations. So I think in the next 6 months, that's really going to be the focus, that we go deeper inside the professional services space. We offer more personalized capabilities to, let's say, a home cleaner compared to a laundromat. Integrate with their POS platforms. We integrate with Clean Cloud already, but build more integrations and build more capabilities. Like I said, build a capability for engagement, for publishing content, for publishing FAQs. Somebody might want to ask that, is this laundromat open? What are their working hours before actually placing an order? So build that capability. And a lot of laundromats have reached out to us asking that, we have 3 different stores. How do I handle the orders? So we are using a capability at the back end to identify the user's zip code and match that with the zip code of the laundromat. We want to handle holidays. Laundromats work on holidays. They don't work on holidays. So we give them a capability. So one is, of course, building a lot more capabilities and integrating with a lot of other platforms within this domain. That's what we are focusing on in the next 6 months from a product perspective. From a customer perspective, from a business perspective, the idea really is to be able to close at least 100 paying customers in the next 6 months. And I'm pretty confident that we should be able to get there if we solve the marketing problems correctly. So that's really our aim in the next 6 months. I think in the next years to come, one big problem that we're facing today is that once we've, so the idea is that once we've had about 100 paying customers, then we focus on getting them accessibility, discoverability. If you look at Alexa skills today, most of them are not really discoverable. And I'm sure that, of course, I was not there when web was built, but I'm sure that this was also a problem during the web era or the mobile era. It was difficult to identify and access apps or websites. Similar is the case here. So most people come back to us saying that, how do people identify us? How do they enable our skill? So really working with them on identifying marketing channels for them and how people can really access their skills and start really downloading their Alexa skill and using it. So that's what I think we would work on in the next 2 years, so that we can help them get the most out of what they've built with us.
Yeah, that discoverability issue is definitely one of those dominoes that needs to fall. And I think I'm in the same camp that it will eventually. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that once it finally does. But now that we've talked a lot about your company specifically, I'd be interested to hear your sort of outlook on the audio and voice industry as a whole over the next few years and what really gets you excited about it.
Sure. So I think 2019 has really been the year when voice broke out of the hype and took concrete steps. Both from a consumer perspective and from a business perspective. If you look at it from a platform perspective, I think I would have personally seen at least 10 platforms come up just in 2019. In different spaces, somebody's doing surveys, somebody's enabling voice surveys, somebody's enabling voice analytics, somebody's enabling voice marketing. So there's a lot happening in this space, and that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. And even from a consumer perspective, I think the usage has gone up. Amazon's doing everything possible, right from reducing the cost of the Amazon Alexa to really doing a lot of marketing to make sure that there is usage and access. So that's why I think that this space is really gaining a lot of heat now, and there's a lot of action happening around this. So it's very exciting. I think from a future perspective, what I feel is that most people are using it for content consumption today or for entertainment today, which I think is probably a part of Amazon's strategy, I'm not sure, to quietly get people habituated to using these platforms. And once that happens, then slowly get people to start using this for transactions or for buying or for more business use cases. So I think that's what the future really is about. And once that happens, then the platform shift. It's not a platform shift where people will move from web to mobile to voice. Business will still exist on web, mobile, and voice, obviously, because voice has a lot of pros and cons. But a lot of business will happen over voice in the next 3 to 4 years is what I feel.
Yeah, that progression makes a lot of sense. Thanks for all the insights and things you brought to the show. It's very interesting. The product's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see also some of those additional features you're talking about over the next 6 months and few years actually come in and be able to be accessed by your customers. But what's the best place for the listeners of the show to either use the product or follow what you're doing, follow yourself, all that good stuff?
Sure. Thanks a lot, firstly, for having me on the show. I think it's been a very interesting conversation. I have a lot to take back myself. I think as far as discovering us, we have our website, which is emitter.com, emitter.com. And we have our social profiles. So on Twitter, it's the handle is emitter, E-M-I-T-R-R. So you can follow us there to know what we are up to and keep yourself updated with what we're building.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Amal, for coming on the Voicing Startups podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.
This podcast is sponsored by VoicePunch VC. VoicePunch is a venture capital fund that is focused on voice-driven and voice-connected technology. So if you are a company or an entrepreneur that has a product that is in this sort of space, much like a lot of the different companies that I am interviewing, then you should reach out to the team by going to voicepunch.vc.